We're aggressively recruiting right now the world's best scientists to come to Vito here, right? And so then you have the combination of the world's best infrastructure combined with the world's best scientists, and we can do the world's best research.
Welcome to Startupville, the show where we discuss the growing technology and research sector in Saskatchewan, Canada. I'm your producer, Ariel Delorier. Our host is Mike Wolsfeld, and today we're releasing a special episode in celebration of Canadian Innovation Week. We're interviewing three leaders from research institutes that Innovation Saskatchewan proudly funds. May 15th through 19th, we celebrate, recognize, and support ingenuity across all sectors by sharing stories of inspiring Canadian innovators and innovations that are changing the world one idea at a time. Today's theme is Innovate for Health. To address the global health decline, we're exploring the groundbreaking contributions that Saskatchewan-based research foundations are doing to make significant impact for a healthier future. We're kicking this episode off with Dr. Volker Gerz, the director and CEO of the Vaccine and Infectious Disease Organization, otherwise known as VITO. VITO is Canada's Centre for Pandemic Research, a world leader in infectious disease research and vaccine development for humans and animals. Welcome to Startupville. The Startupville podcast is brought to you by Innovation Saskatchewan.
All right, we are here with Volker Gerz from VITO InterVac on the podcast today. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So we're here celebrating Canadian Innovation Week, talking to innovators in our community who are working to solve problems in the health space. And VITO does a lot of work in this, and it's also top of mind for just about everybody in the world in terms of vaccines and treatments such as that. So to get us started here, Volker, why don't you tell us what VITO does and what your role in the organization
is? Sure, happy to. So VITO honestly is one of the most exciting places in the world. We're developing vaccines for both humans and animals, and we're looking at all these new diseases as they emerge and coming up with solutions of how to control them. So that could be for animal diseases, for livestock diseases in particular that we focus on. But maybe as you've heard, we're really one of Canada's leading institutes during the pandemic, really driving Canada's response to COVID, have a vaccine that is in clinical trials, both here in Canada and Africa. But more exciting, we're building for the future. So we're now becoming Canada's Centre for Pandemic Research, and that is allowing us to, after we built the infrastructure and after we recruit the world's best scientists to VITO, in the future to respond to any new disease. And so that's very, very exciting, I think, not only for the city of Saskatoon, for the province of Saskatchewan, but also all of Canada, and in fact, the world. We need to have these research organizations that can rapidly respond to a new disease and within days rather than years provide solutions for it.
That's incredible. And VITO's been doing incredible work for years, for a really long time. And it's really just kind of the pandemic recently that's really brought it to the public eye. And now, like you say, you've been identified as the, you know, the Canadian center for all of this. So I'd love to know a little bit more. What makes Saskatchewan special and being located here that's enabled you to become a leader both nationally and globally with what you do?
Well, I think Saskatchewan is really an agricultural province, and so this is where VITO started up. We were a spin-off from the Vet College just across the road, and you know, because of the agriculture in Saskatchewan, people value the importance of vaccines, research in infectious diseases. They understand the impact an infectious disease can have on their livestock, on their herds, and you know, on their livelihoods, really. And so early on, more than 40 years ago now, The need for a research organization was realized that focuses on technologies, on getting products developed. So, you know, in addition to doing the early discovery research, VITO's focus is really now taking that research into an applied solution that allows us to, at the end of the day, to have a vaccine or some sort of a therapeutic in the producer's arm. And so then that quickly evolved into becoming an organization that is focused both on human and animal infectious diseases, right? And so as the mandate broadened, VITO developed a number of vaccines initially for animals. VITO is now looking at making vaccines also for humans. And so the pandemic came and we were ready to respond. But what we were lacking at the time was to have an in-house manufacturing facility, for example, that allowed us to rapidly make our own vaccine. And so being in Saskatchewan, I think all of this is being recognized as being part of the innovation cluster in Saskatchewan. We're now building or have constructed already our in-house vaccine manufacturing facility. Well, that will it'll help us to work with companies. That will help us to bring companies to Saskatchewan. It will help us to drive and continue to expand Saskatchewan's innovation cluster. You know, the university is one of the few universities in the world, really, that has a strong, what we call a One Health focus, where you really tie animal and human health together, and even, you know, like plant health, like through GIFs and other institutes here. And so the university has really a cluster, One Health cluster, that ranges from the College of Veterinary Medicine to the College of Medicine to agriculture, but also then to, you know, nursing and all these others, pharmacy and so on. So really a One Health environment here at the university. This is truly a One Health university. One of the signature areas of the university is a One Health university, right? Or is One Health. And so if you now place that all into an innovation environment where we're trying to work with companies, where we're making them move here, where we attract them through incentives, I think that's why Saskatchewan is so great to be here compared to other provinces.
That's fantastic. And you talked a little bit there about this kind of expansion into, you know, bring not just sort of the doing the primary research and whatnot, identifying new potential vaccines and whatnot, but also bringing those to the world, to the market, through these partnerships with corporations and whatnot. So Innovation Saskatchewan, we sort of, you know, we work across the spectrum of, you know, helping organizations with primary research, but then also helping startups and corporates with, you know, commercialization opportunities. And you seem to be sort of now moving across the line as well. Tell me a little bit about how that's changed the organization, how the expertise in your organization enables you to not just do the primary research, but also work to commercialize these innovations and bring them to the world.
Sure. So it's, you know, the way vaccines are developed and commercialized is really that in most cases, large commercial companies are acquiring technologies from research organizations like ours or smaller biotech, right? And so the way it works is that, you know, a research organization like ours has an idea. We test it at the lab scale, then we take it into proof of concept testing. And then really from there, it needs to be manufactured at pilot scale. And then that manufactured batch, a clinical batch, then allows you to go into clinical trials, test the vaccine. The regulators approve all of that. And if the vaccine is still working as you hope it would, you then sign a deal with a large company to then commercially manufacture it afterwards. And so the idea is really that you don't want to wait to sign the deal with a company at the late stage of clinical development. As you really want to sign deals with companies very early in the development process. And so what Vito is doing now is really changing or further optimizing the way we do our research by implementing things like a stage gate approach, for example. We added a development group to our research, you know, so that once there is a promising candidate that shows up in the discovery research, we now take this candidate and then evaluate it in a way that all the evaluation can be then used by our future industrial partner for registration of the product. So they don't have to go back and redo everything, which would take a lot of time. We do it in a way that the industry then can use those results for their application for registration of the product in Canada or wherever they want to register it. And so that really is increasing what we call the tech readiness level of our research, right? So with addition of the manufacturing facility and the stage gate approach and so on, we're now increasing our tech readiness level from a 3 to 4 to maybe now a 6 to 7. And on a scale of 1 to 9, we're almost at the end of the scale, right? And that de-risks the innovation, the technology for the companies. That's why they're more interested in buying and taking a license to that product, because it has already undergone critical questions of, can we manufacture it? Is it safe to use? How does it look? Does it work in humans, for example, or in animals? Does it work in clinical trials? Once you address all these questions, it's a much more you know, attractive target for the industry. And so that's really what has changed now over the last few years at Vito. In essence, we've done it before as well. We now just have implemented a few more processes of how to really drive that rather than letting it happen by itself kind of thing.
That's incredible. So you're really helping, yeah, like you say, de-risk the problem there so that companies can take it and run with it. It's something right. that, you know, I'm certainly not deep into this area myself, but I know it's a challenge in a lot of primary research is helping with that, like you say, tech readiness level so that it can be transitioned into something that can work in the real world. Is there something that you've learned through the process of developing these processes and strategies in your organization that can help other researchers and other organizations sort of do the same and de-risk what they're working on to increase the likelihood that it sees the light of day?
Yeah, we've learned a lot during the pandemic. Within 8 weeks after the pandemic officially was declared by WHO, after the first sequence even was available of the virus, so in January, 8 weeks later, Vito had a candidate vaccine that was ready to go into animal trials. And we all thought, okay, we know how to make vaccines, right? And then we discovered that, you know, I'm a scientist, from a scientific point of view, we thought we had a candidate, but then comes all the other stuff that goes into development. How you manufacture it, where you get your supplies from, what materials are you using, where is the quality control for all of those components that you put together. Then what's your manufacturing, your CMC strategy? How are you planning to use it into human clinical trials? Where is it being manufactured? Who is responsible for that? What is their quality control that they have in their facility and so on? So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, as an academic researcher, we thought we were vaccine developers. Well, we're really more vaccine inventors, if you want. There comes mm-hmm. a whole phase of making a vaccine, developing a vaccine, where you look at all the process of how to manufacture it, where to get the material from, what kind of material, and all under a quality control, right? So whatever you do needs to be repeatable. It needs to be in an absolutely safe way so that there's no contaminants in the vaccine. And it needs to be done in a way that, again, our future partner can use it for their regulatory approval. And so that really taught us a lot. It taught us that, and so coming back to your question, what can others, how can others benefit from it? The earlier you start thinking about how to manufacture your idea, your prototype vaccine at scale, the sooner you start looking into what is required later on to do all of this, the sooner you will have a technology that industry is interested in. I think that really makes a difference, and that's what Canada was globally, even before the pandemic, lacking behind. We have great research in Canada. We have great university discovery research happening, and then comes the valley of death, where many of these technologies are just dying because nobody is further developing or hasn't thought about it, or, you know, the materials that were used are just simply too expensive to commercially manufacture later on, right? So the sooner you ask these questions about your technology, the sooner you have something that you can offer to the industry. And that's why with our stage gate approach, our stage zero is really where we say, okay, well, give me a review of, you know, what's the competitive landscape out there? How do you make your vaccine? Who's going to buy it? What's the anticipated cost? How are you going to use your vaccine? All those things at a phase where normally you would still be writing papers. But now we're pushing you and saying, well, give me an idea of the product. So that, you know, you now start thinking about all the things that have to fall in place later on. And so I think that's going to change how in Canada, at Vito and in Canada, how we make vaccines, and that people will start hopefully thinking much earlier about their future product and what is needed to get it to a commercial scale.
Yeah, that's incredible. As you move forward now with this new facility that you built with the Pandemic Center, I'd love to learn more about, you know, when people think about vaccines these days, it's often very fear-based, I don't want to go through that again, but you're clearly very passionate about what you do and what you're working on. I'd love to hear more about what about this facility and what you're working on in general that makes you optimistic, makes you excited about the future?
Yeah, so it's very, very exciting. We're building now Canada's Center for Pandemic Research right here in Saskatoon, right? And so what we're doing is we already are operating Canada's largest high containment facility, which allows us to work with these dangerous pathogens in a safe way and at the same time ensure that these pathogens are not being released or get into our, into our livestock industries and so on. So it's already Canada's largest high containment laboratory, one of the three largest in the world, right here in Saskatchewan, right? What we're now doing is we're upgrading it to the highest level of containment, what's called level four. So there's four levels of containment to pathogens, one being the lowest, that's what we use in our kitchens, for making bread and so on, yeast. Level two pathogens are the ones that we encounter in daycare, schools, and so on. Level three pathogens like tuberculosis or the HIV are ones that potentially are very dangerous to the individual, but maybe don't have the huge public health impact. Then they don't spread as fast. And then level four are really the diseases that potentially also spread very rapidly. And so what we're doing now is we're upgrading as the only non-government lab in Canada, the only other lab in Canada, and we're upgrading to the highest level. And so what that does is it would allow us in the future to work with any disease, whether it's a human or an animal disease, right? So we're preparing for the future. Nobody can predict what the next big global pandemic, what the next big problem is going to be. We're getting ready for it. We're building the infrastructure to be able to work with it. So that's number one. Number two, as we just discussed, we already constructed a manufacturing facility in-house now. So instead of what we had to do with our COVID vaccine, contract others to manufacture all the individual components for us, which delayed our development of our vaccine and therefore delayed the vaccine overall, we can do it now all in-house. We don't have to wait for others to do this anymore. We can do it in-house. So therefore, we're able to rapidly respond. And if you look around the world for COVID, the vaccines that maybe were the fastest. So the AstraZeneca vaccine was developed at the Jenner Institute at the University of Oxford. An institute just looks like ours, does exactly the same kind of work, but has already all these things in place. So they were able to rapidly respond, rapidly to get their vaccine out, rapidly get it licensed to AstraZeneca. The Moderna vaccine was developed at the Vaccine Research Center at the NIH in the US, a lab that just looks like Vito, does the same thing. They quickly license it to Moderna. So once you have all these components in place, then you're able to rapidly respond. And as we discussed earlier, take these discoveries then rapidly into clinical development and then into commercial production. So the manufacturing facility number two. And the third element we're adding right now is we're building a new animal facility that allows us to hold all these exotic species from which we see these diseases emerge. Bats, for example, right? I mean, bats are full of viruses. We don't know why, but they're always involved in any of the new diseases, whether they transmit to animals and then from animals to humans or sometimes directly to humans. So we need to understand why that is. We need to be able to work with bats. So we're building a new facility that allows us to work with bats, with reptiles, with insects, all these different species from which we see these diseases emerge. So those are the three infrastructure puzzles, if you want, or pieces of the puzzle. The fourth then is that we're aggressively recruiting right now the world's best scientists to come to Vito here, right? And so then you have the combination of the world's best infrastructure combined with the world's best scientists, and we can do the world's best research. And where is that research leading us? Well, the paradigm always has been that with vaccines, we wait until a new disease emerges, and then we make a vaccine for it. Typically for human vaccines, that takes 10, 15 years. If you throw a lot of money at it, as we did with COVID, you can bring it down to a year or two. But we can't really afford to do that every time. And even then, the world lost trillions of dollars in economic losses, right? And millions of lives due to the pandemic. So the real question is, why can't we predict what the next disease is and make a vaccine for it today? And so the science is there now that we can predict the structure of these pathogens. We know much more how the immune system recognizes them. We are now at a stage where we can make vaccines for something that hasn't emerged yet based on looking at other members of the family. So for coronaviruses, we can look amongst the various coronaviruses and we can say, what is we call it conserved? What is shared amongst all of them? focus on those things with our vaccine, make a vaccine now, and use facilities like ours to test it, to develop it, to the point of essentially stockpiling it. So we could have 50 million doses stored in Geneva at the WHO headquarters. A new disease emerges, an airplane takes off with 50 million doses on board. You start vaccinating people right away. You avoid the global spread of the disease. We can control it right away before seeing it spreading around the world and then trying to catch up with it. And that's where the science is going. That's where Vito is going. That's where we are so excited about. And so, for example, we're partnering with the world's largest organization for a new emerging disease is called CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, an organization that was stood up by governments around the world, Canada, Norway, Germany, UK, US, Japan, but also received support from the Gates Foundation and others. And so there it's all about making vaccines for these groups of pathogens so that you have something to respond right away and don't have to start working when a new disease emerges. So that's very, very exciting for us.
Wow, very exciting indeed. And you heard it here. The world's best infrastructure, the world's best scientists, the world's best future tellers here at Vito, right here in Saskatchewan. So we're just running out of time here, Volker. So we always like at the show to help our viewers get in touch with our guests if they have any more questions or if they'd love to reach out. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so we do have a website. So if you go, it's www.vito.org. There is all the information there of how to get in contact with us. There's phone numbers that you can call. We have communications people that are happy to have a chat with you. I often have people calling directly. I'll speak to them on the phone. We're happy to hear from you. And, you know, it's so great to have the support from Innovation Saskatchewan and other funders to make this vision really reality. We are so excited about that.
Amazing. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Next on this episode is Patrick Odnikon, Chief Executive Officer with Saskatchewan Health Research Foundation, or SHRF. SHRF funds, supports, and promotes the impact of health research that matters to Saskatchewan.
All right, we are here with Patrick Odnikon, CEO of the Saskatchewan Health Research Foundation, or SHRF. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So we're here during Canadian Innovation Week, when this episode is going to release, talking to innovators in the health space and how they're working on products and solutions in health. So Patrick, I would love to learn more about you and what you do. So tell us.
Yeah. So CEO for an organization that's really on the cusp of starting a lot of research out and getting things going for the ecosystem here in Saskatchewan. So essentially, I lead an organization that builds capacity in the research realm. So we have funding programs that get researchers started and get them on their way. Recruitment, retention of these researchers coming to Saskatchewan. We increase the amount of investment in Saskatchewan for research. So we partner with provincial and national organizations to increase that pool of dollars for access for research in Saskatchewan. And then, another big thing is we don't do research, or we don't fund research just for the sake of funding research. We fund research that aligns with our stakeholders and our government's priorities. So, for example, our solutions program that's I think one of our hallmark programs. Our first year doing that, it was on we had a focus area on digital health, which was perfect timing because we were just going into a pandemic and guess what we needed? We need to spin into digital health. Second year on that one, we did addictions, which was also a byproduct of, I think, the pandemic in some sense. And then this past year, we did something on rural and remote health. And that's important because, there's a lot of people in Saskatchewan that don't live in Saskatchewan or Regina that need access to healthcare and what have you. So there's different projects that we've funded on that realm. So in general, those are kind of the three big areas that SHRF kind of tries to make a dent in Saskatchewan and tries to help the big system operate on a better notion.
That's fantastic. And so you're able to sort of be agile as an organization, it sounds, and really help solve timely problems for the community. Tell us a little bit about how that works on that side of things. I know research is commonly thought of as a very slow moving animal, right? How does an organization like yours stay on top of what the needs are in the community and then help fund the research to solve problems?
You know, that's a great question. We have a very diverse board that has government representation, business representation, folks from the university and different researchers. So we do rely on our board to help get a pulse on what some of those priorities are. But we're always out there talking with the community, talking with our researchers. You know, we have stakeholders in the health system that we're always talking to, researchers. You know, all of our not-for-profits. We've got lots of partnerships with not-for-profits, and so to try to take a look and what is the pulse. Try to predict the whole Gretzky analogy of, you know, don't go where the puck is, but where the puck may be, right? So you know, we need to be able to take a look at the whole ecosystem and see what's needed. For example, coming up next year, we've pivoted and our focus area is going to be on child and youth health. We've seen through the pandemic, I don't mean to pick on the pandemic, but it has been a driver for a lot of things. Yeah. And so we're going to be establishing several partnerships that really look at child and youth health. And you know, we have a beautiful hospital now here in Saskatoon that serves the province, that the Jim Patterson Children's Hospital. And you know, what research is going on there, and how can we help the delivery of care to our kids in the cities, in the rural and remote, in Indigenous communities? It's a huge undertaking, but something that we see is pretty important.
That's amazing. Yeah. And so another theme I'm picking up on here is that you're not just agile and looking at timely problems, but also it sounds very practical, and that you're looking to solve real world problems or help fund solutions to solve real world problems. And one of the challenges in that is oftentimes moving things from research to market. I'd love to know a little bit more about how you can help organizations or how you help with that side of the problem. Cause you know, coming up with the next new interesting technology or solution is just, you know, maybe not even the first half of it, right? There's a whole lot more that has to go to get that in the hands of people to really help people. So tell us a little bit about that.
Another great question. You've done your research on research. You know, what you're really talking about is something called knowledge translation. You know, how do we actually use the research? Once again, we don't do research just for the sake of research and trying to solve or prove theories. We're actually funding research that that can actually make a difference, and that's important. So one of the things we do is within all of our applications, we do ask for a knowledge translation plan from the research. You know, how's that actually going to happen? What are you going to implement? Who are you talking to? You know, who's on your team? You know, we've noticed that if you do have a decision maker, a policy maker, somebody who's frontline on the research team, patients on the research team, guess what? That research tends to have a better chance of being implemented and see some difference. So that's one thing we do on the application side and the funding side. The other one is we do have a program called Research Connections. I think we're rebranding that into something called Mobilization, but essentially, how do we take these ideas? How do we take the research that's already been done and turn it into action? And that's not always easy. So that's the important part of having researchers collaborate with non-academics, non-researchers. How do we actually get this stuff into action? And it's a tough thing. But through some of these programs, we've been successful in. One example I'll maybe give you is we, you know, the whole Truth and Reconciliation Commission kind of came out with all of these recommendations. You know, we noticed as an organization that, you know, sometimes these things are just words, you know, research, publications, they're just words. So we actually developed a program within the Connections grant to address Truth and Reconciliation. It's called Truth in Action. And so these grants are up to $10,000 to actually do some work to address the real needs of an Indigenous community and in partnership. And full disclosure, it's actually been quite receptive. There's been lots of action on it, and so we're going to be offering that for the third year this year. And it's pretty cool to see these projects take action and actually do something. Not saying all of our other projects don't do anything, but these are really frontline organizations and researchers working together to engage youth, to engage elders, to engage community, to actually make a difference. So there's another example for you.
That's amazing. And it's so awesome to see that engagement occur, to really see action in our communities. And what I'm hearing here as well is that there's a lot of cross-departmental, cross-expertise skill sets happening here, you know, all the way from the research side to, like you said, the non-academics and the market side of things, but also, you know, community and members of the community and engagement. And so there's a lot of different people in this like talent and community ecosystem that comes into play. And so I'd love to learn a little bit more about the role that you think that Saskatchewan plays in that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the types of people and the talent that we have here that helps enable your research and helps bring some of these things into the world.
Yeah. You know, the word you're looking for, interdisciplinary. We've got, you know, we don't want just somebody working with somebody down the hall from them. You know, we're looking at academics working, you know, across colleges, across faculties. We're looking at researchers working with other institutions. But even to go further and kind of towards your question, the collaborations that we want are important. So the collaborations we want patients involved in some of the decision making and helping ask what research questions really need to be asked. We want not-for-profits, and we want health system leaders, and we want, you know, all these people to be on these grants, because once again, you know, the more people that have different views, diverse views, that can only improve the research, and that's kind of what we're looking for. On the other kind of point you're getting at, you know, we're seeing a lot of our researchers being just absolute rock stars, you know, nationally and internationally, and you know, not just the Volker Gertz that I saw walking out of here, who is an absolute rock star, and actually was our achievement award winner this past year at our Sante Awards. So just a little push for him and Vito. But you know, we funded a lot of Vito people, but also there's expertise that we have in this province that, you know, nobody knows about. I honestly think Saskatchewan is the best kept secret when it comes to research and expertise. Down at the University of Regina, we've got the psychology department and the people working on first responders trauma and the psychology behind it. We've got online therapy units. We've got caregiver apps to help people maneuver, you know, taking care of an older adult, like all the psychology stuff at the U of R and even some of the biomedical stuff and genetics and stuff. I'm a science geek, and you know, I don't understand half of it, but wow, it's something special to see what expertise we have in this province and the recognition that we're getting, you know, internationally, which just isn't in the front page of the newspaper every day, for obvious reasons, but it's some pretty cool stuff that we have going on here.
Yeah, that really is amazing. The types of people that I think a lot of people in Saskatchewan don't even know exist here, right? And they're really coming up with world-class innovations and whatnot that are solving problems globally, not just right here in our backyard. Yeah. I'd love to hear more about what really excites you, what's coming down the pipe, and what really excites you in the area of innovating for health.
I'll keep on the technology theme because I think some of your listeners would love that. But the exciting part is seeing some of the technology being used outside its original purpose. Right? You think about virtual reality and the company Luxonic. They're working with an indigenous community and looking at how VR can assist with and how it's related to mental health. So thinking about, okay, that's frontline. That's actually using this stuff. It's not just it's just not gaming anymore, mm-hmm. Which is pretty cool. They're also using VR for to train paramedics and in rural and remote areas and testing how that is. So using technology that wasn't the first intent for it, mm-hmm. is pretty cool to see. You think of Ivor Mendez and some of the robotic stuff and, mm-hmm. Giving an ultrasound to somebody in northern Saskatchewan and being able to do it from Saskatoon at the facility here it's almost Star Trek stuff. Yeah. Right? it's pretty cool. And, I think a lot of times we kind of underestimate the use of technology in health and healthcare. Everybody's got a healthcare app on your phone. Take a look at what that's going to turn into in years, in how it develops and how it's going to actually influence how we take care of ourselves, but not how doctors and nurses communicate to us. Like it's a changing world and we're going to have to keep up. So I think the research on how to use it ethically and how to use it appropriately and make sure it's not just not just another app on your phone. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a pretty cool place to go.
Yeah, that really is incredible. And it's a great point that it's only recently that we're seeing a lot of these technologies that, traditionally were sort of brought to market in consumer applications, whether you're looking at, smartphones and VR and other things like that, that are now really starting to enter the world of all the other ways that we live, right? Not just taking pictures and sharing them with friends, but how we take care of ourselves and our bodies. That's really, really incredible to see some of that really come to life. So unfortunately, our time is running to a close here, but we always love to help our listeners get in touch with our guests and ask questions or just dive a little bit deeper after the show. So how can people get in touch with you?
Best thing, go to the website, shrf.ca. It's a pretty simple, we got it early, so it's ours. There's lots of stuff on the website, lots of stories that, I couldn't even touch half of them. But there's lots of stories. There's lots about the researchers that we've funded, some of the initiatives that we're involved in, the solutions program, child and youth health. How do you get involved in research? Give us a call. We're actually local. We've got phone numbers. You can email us. But shrf.ca, best place to start your search and start your research on the research that's going on in Saskatchewan.
Amazing. Sounds great. Well, Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Our final guest on today's episode is Dr. John Root, Executive Director at Sylvia Fedorick Canadian Centre for Nuclear Innovation. The Fedorick Centre offers resources and services that help improve the health and well-being of our communities through nuclear methods and innovations.
Okay. We are here with the Executive Director of the Sylvia Fedorick Center for Nuclear Innovation, John Root. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So we're here today celebrating Canadian Innovation Week when this episode will come out. And the day that this episode comes out, we're celebrating those who innovate for health. So we're talking to Canadian innovators who are making a significant impact on health and well-being. To learn more about their groundbreaking contributions for healthcare equity, medical research, and more. So let's dive right into it, John. So first, just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do at the Sylvia Fedoric Center.
All right. Well, executive director means I'm ultimately responsible for the whole operation. I report to a board of directors, an independent board. We are a not-for-profit corporation. We have one member, which is the University of Saskatchewan, and we're funded to a large degree by the province through Innovation Saskatchewan, through a funding agreement, and to a lesser degree by revenue from third parties, because part of what we do is we produce products and services at the Saskatchewan Cyclotron facility, and we can make revenue from those activities, which goes towards the other aspects of our business.
Amazing. So tell me a little bit of about those products and services and the things that you do. What sort of, I guess, in a day in the life for the Fedoric Center and the people on your team?
Okay, so there's 15, 16 people in the team. Most of them are working at the Saskatchewan Cyclotron facility. And that facility has two purposes. Early in the morning, like 4 in the morning, it starts with cranking up a cyclotron and bombarding a target to make fluorine 18, which is an isotope that can then be turned into a radiopharmaceutical, something you inject in patients, enabling them to have PET scanning done to analyze their cancer. So it's an essential nuclear imaging agent that's needed to diagnose and plan treatments of patients who have to, we have to have the facility in Saskatchewan close to the hospital. And so this is a facility for the people of Saskatchewan. Facility has to be close because the stuff doesn't last very long. It's a radioactive tracer and it decays with a half-life of 2 hours. So you got to make it pretty well on site in order to use it effectively during the day. So that is something we do every day, starting at 4 in the morning, turn on the cyclotron, make the radiopharmaceutical, deliver it to the hospital, and then patients are scanned throughout the rest of the day. You start the cycle again the next morning. But that's a part of what the facility does. The other part is it's available for researchers to undertake their programs of research and education in nuclear imaging sciences. Nuclear imaging is something you could apply to any living thing. Could be a plant, canola, could be a mouse with a tumor, or it could be something in between. We have researchers who come into our facility to develop new agents, new chemicals. You can handle radioactive isotopes safely in our facility. That's what attracts people to come in and use hot cells, which have remote manipulator arms for handling things without any hazard to yourself. And we have a micro PET imager. You know how you do PET scanning on people? Well, we can do PET scanning on mice. Put the little mouse in the imager and collect a picture of where the tumor is in the mouse and whether it's growing from day to day, whether the treatment you're giving is effective. So it's all kinds of research being enabled by the facility. That's the facility side of what we do. We're enabling research. We're not necessarily leading every research project, but we're enabling projects led by Saskatchewan scientists from Saskatchewan institutions and companies. We have companies coming in to develop new nuclear medical products. They, like the researchers, they need to be able to handle radioactive materials safely. And so they come in and they use our facilities in order to move their products closer to market. So in order to support this research and innovation in the facility, we have a big overhead. We have professional staff that help to plan experiments, help to develop new techniques and new instruments and methods for handling things. They interact with the nuclear regulator. We have a lot of rules and regulations that we have to obey in order to assure the public that everything is being done safely. So we report to the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission. We report to Health Canada because we're making a product that goes into people for medical purposes. And we are also accountable to the university's regulatory system, Canada Labor Code. So there's a lot of overhead in order to have a facility operating and enabling the work of others. And that's what the Fedoric Center is doing at the facility.
Incredible. So I think you kind of answered this a little bit and kind of what we've been talking about with, you know, just the sheer amount of infrastructure and overhead that you have to put into something like this. But when you're attracting researchers and companies, you know, from around the world to this one facility, what is it that makes it a unique facility and makes your organization unique that attracts these companies here that, you know, they might not find somewhere else?
Right. Well, I think one of the things that's unique and innovative and is a kind of a Saskatchewan thing, most facilities like ours are connected to a big hospital somewhere, and their mission is make the imaging agent for the hospital. They don't want students running around, fiddling around with the equipment because it puts their routine operation at risk. But our mission here is more supporting the innovation and supporting the education. So we're a little bit unique in that we welcome students and researchers to come in. We'll do some training on the facility, but we encourage them to get hands-on and learn how to participate in nuclear innovation, hands-on. We have 100 young people who've come through. They've been trained as nuclear energy workers. They know how to handle hot cells. They know how to handle radioactive sources all safely. And so we think that strengthening Saskatchewan as a whole to participate in nuclear research development and training, to become familiar with nuclear materials, to become familiar with radioisotopes, and to be able to undertake some pretty interesting innovation safely and make some progress. That's unique in what we do. We also are unique in our business model for access to the facility. Like I said, most facilities like ours are connected to some larger entity, whereas we're a not-for-profit corporation standalone. So unlike most facilities, all the people that work for us, for our little company with our 15 or 16 people. All the costs of running the facility are borne by us. So our business model is cost recovery. We charge for user access based on the direct costs of providing the service. And we have a contract that you sign in order to get access to the facility that lays out the limitations. We're not making a profit. It's a not-for-profit corporation. But we're trying to recover all of our costs so that if one person, hypothetically, if one person was using all the workstations in the facility for the full year, the cost of running the facility would be covered by that one person, mm-hmm. rather than have it subsidized by the taxpayers. And that's kind of innovative to try and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be able to attract people who might not have access to similar things elsewhere. And the training and piece about the hands-on learning with researchers and students. I mean, in a lot of the work that we do, labor market plays such an important role. We talk to a lot of startups and businesses on the podcast here. And it's the same thing here. If you're looking to attract companies and researchers from around the world, you know, it's important that the people exist in that region that can provide expertise and help them out on that project.
So we're on a journey to create that capacity. And I think we're making good progress in that, that part of nuclear technology right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. Quickly as well. So like I said, a lot of the companies we have on the podcast are startups, businesses, on the commercialization side of things. And I think often forgotten in that is the primary research being done at institutions like yours and universities and other research institutes that lead to down the line commercializable products and services. I wonder if you can just elaborate a little bit on the role that you play in sort of advancing that primary research today so that innovations can maybe be discovered tomorrow.
Yep. So our users, some of them are academic users doing very fundamental research that develops something very new and has a journey of its own to travel before it can be commercialized. So we're supporting research at that end of the spectrum. We also have companies who are users who already know what they want to make, but they have to refine some details in order to get it ready for the market. And they come into our facility, they still need the same capabilities to do what they need to do, and we're enabling them to do that. We have one or two companies who know exactly what they want to do, and they're going to need lots of access to facility to do it. The accelerator and the irradiating to make isotopes. And then it's just a matter of we're giving them access, we're providing basic support for their operation, and they're compensating us for access to the facility for a certain amount of time. All of those, what we're trying to do is treat them all somewhat similarly in that they're all in common need access to the specialized facilities and some technical support to do what they want to do, whether it's basic research, development, or production. So we treat them all like clients. Mm-hmm. That's our preferred business model. Somebody needs access to our facility. We make sure it's maintained in a state of readiness. They pay their share for coming in. We don't hold on to the intellectual property. That's up to the various users, but we need to be compensated fully in exchange for that. We're not impeding the basic science for sure, and mm-hmm. we welcome and want to see basic science being done. They're paying their fair share, and we welcome and embrace industry coming in to do some production. They pay their fair share.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep the boundary as a client-vendor kind of relationship,
yeah.
as opposed to a partnership that's encumbering.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to keep away from that in this early stage of our company.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps in the future, more deeper relationships can be formed. But I think it's premature to do that when you're just getting going.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like a very, you know, a fair proposal, especially when you're looking at something that is so infrastructure and capital intensive. You know, whatever fees might be associated, it's certainly a lot easier than going and raising enough venture capital to build a facility of your own, let's say, right? Yeah. Before we get to the end of our time here, I just want to pick your brain a little bit about what you're excited about in the field of nuclear innovation. What are the types of things that you kind of expect to see come to the world in the next 5, 10, 50 years that might change the way we live?
Wow. We were only talking about one little sliver of even what the Fedoric Center does. So maybe I'll just say broaden that out a little bit for you.
Yeah.
What we were talking about was nuclear imaging for life sciences and medical applications,
mm-hmm.
which everyone can agree is great. everyone will say, oh, yes, my grandmother needed a PET scan for her cancer. And thank goodness you made the nuclear imaging agent that enabled that to happen. Good news story. But another thing that's coming up in Saskatchewan is using nuclear energy to help to reduce our reliance on burning fossil fuels. You can remove coal-fired generating of electricity if you can replace that capacity with something that's equally steady and reliable but doesn't burn a fossil fuel. And there aren't a lot of choices to do that, but one of them is to use uranium nuclear fuel in order to make the heat, in order to make the steam, in order to turn the turbine, in order to generate electricity. It's just like a coal fire generating station, but the heater is nuclear. Now, Fedoric Center's in that zone as well, because there are people who want to participate in bringing nuclear power into the province. That requires training programs and knowledge about nuclear materials, engineering, safety, a whole realm of activities that go from academic to practical. So the Fedoric Center can enable that too. We have a granting program where professors can apply for money to do a research project in any nuclear topic. It could be nuclear energy, environment, policy, or something to do with geology, let's say. It doesn't matter. If it's got a nuclear component to it, we will consider the proposal along with others in a competitive process, and then we fund the research, which means the professor can now hire a student or a postdoc to work on their area and develop some expertise in the province in the nuclear sector, which helps to familiarize people of Saskatchewan with the whole range of nuclear topics, including energy. So we do that. And we do... We also invest with universities to create new positions for faculty members who are in fields that can be applicable to bringing nuclear energy into the province. So we've got quite a bit of that going on, and I think we should be excited about that because that's Saskatchewan responding to the world's understanding we have to do something about climate change. And there's something we can actually do here in Saskatchewan. We mine the uranium. Now we should be using the uranium so we can reduce our carbon footprint and perhaps enable others to do the same. That's making a difference to the world too.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's something that's been on, you know, almost everybody's minds over the last, you know, 10, 30 to 30 years, right? And it's really exciting to see some of those innovations and some of those solutions coming right out of our province. Mm-hmm. I know I'd love to just sit here and pick your brain about all things nuclear science for hours, but unfortunately we have to go. So for any of our listeners, if they want to look into more in terms of what you guys do and do a little research of their own, where can they go?
Well, we have a website. FedoricCenter.ca, FedoricCenter.ca, which has a reasonable introduction to things we do. It includes a page with resources for people who want to learn about the nuclear energy discussion or the discussion on materials research with neutron beams, policy, different tools. So you can browse around in there and learn about not only the Fedoric Center, but what's going on in Saskatchewan in the nuclear sector.
Amazing. I know I'm going to spend some time there myself.
I hope you enjoy
John,
it.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome.
Startupville is brought to you by Innovation Saskatchewan, helping grow the technology and research sector in our province and beyond. This episode of Startupville is brought to you in celebration of Canadian Innovation Week. Learn more about all of the exciting work being done by Canadian innovators by visiting CanadianInnovationSpace.ca. Our show is produced by me, Ariel Delorier, and our host, Mike Wolfsfeld. Our theme music is from GG Rigs and Reactor Productions. We've moved our social media presence over to the original Innovation Sask channels. Follow us on Twitter to stay in the know at Innovation Sask. Don't forget to review wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us rise up the ranks. See you next time on Startupville.